This is Sarah Wright with Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land, Oral Histories of Mendocino County. Today we'll hear from two people in Covelo who still farm according to the principles of harmony between the garden and the gardener, the buyer and the seller, and the people and animals who use their living power to work the land.
I'm Gloria Decatur. I live in Covelo, a farmer with Live Power Community Farm.
Stephen Decatur, founded Live Power Community Farm, 1973. I had gone to University of California, Santa Cruz, in the first undergraduate class in 1966, and met Alan Chadwick when he came to the garden and began building a garden there in 67. I was there for several years before he went to Covelo, and then I followed him up there to work with establishing the Covelo Village Garden in Covelo.
I grew up in New Jersey, Bergen County, and before Covelo, I did the Waldorf teacher training in Los Angeles and had a friend that heard about Alan Chadwick in Ukiah and went up to Covelo to check it out and ended up being an apprentice there and then met Stephen. And we started the farm.
When I began working with Alan in Santa Cruz and realized that there was a whole world that I had never been introduced to in terms of horticulture and growing plants and working with the living world in a positive way, I realized that that's what I wanted to devote my time and energy to, and Alan became a mentor for me, and I learned to do that work. And so when he was invited by Richard Wilson to come to Covelo around Valley and start a project after he had left Santa Cruz, that was, I think, 73, I wanted to see that project happen because it had meant so much to me in my life. There were hundreds and probably thousands of students that went through the garden in Santa Cruz and got exposed to man working with nature in a positive way with obedience and reverence and respect and discipline, which were very much a part of what Alan brought for people. And so when he was willing to go and try to start another garden in another place, clear up in Mendocino County, I got out the map and looked up Covelo. I didn't know where it was, and decided I wanted to help that happen if I could, because it meant so much in my life, and I wanted to see it establish and create that opportunity for other people.
Well, the first time I came to Covelo, I had driven straight from L.A. to Covelo, so it was a rather large shock, and I was thrilled to arrive there in the peace and the quiet and the beauty and the, you know, and the opportunities there, and, you know, all the wonderful aspects of nature that were so accessible to what we were doing.
And what about community up there? Were you kind of on your own, or did you find that you were part of some kind of a social order that existed?
Well, the garden project, led by Alan Chadwick, attracted, in the first year, I think there were probably 13 or more of us young people. I mean, I was 25 or something at the time. And then over the years that Alan was there, which was like almost five, I think, there were years when 30 and more students would come to the garden and work together. One of the things that Alan would stress was that we have to obey the laws of nature and that we can magnify what nature is doing. So there was a whole community of young people that had this idealism and were working together to manifest the garden and to share it with other people. So it was a very special opportunity.
Well, similar to what Stephen was talking about, but also I helped to create a Waldorf school in Kovalo. Unfortunately, it didn't last that long, but we had quite a large group of people who were interested, and we bought 5 acres of land, and we had study groups, and we had the school started, and we would read various things together, and we attracted teachers from quite a faraway distance, and while it was going, it was really, really wonderful, and it was a great asset to the community at that time. That was in the early days, and then as we went along and as my children appeared, the Waldorf School had passed on, and then we started a charter school, one of the first in California, actually, and had our community through that. And then eventually we became a part of the biodynamic community, and that was quite special for us.
And I think the community surrounding us when we came and started the gardens in Kovalo was pretty much traditional ranching community and Native American communities. And they probably wondered what these young hippie-ish looking people were doing and if they were some kind of rehabilitation program or what. But then when they saw us working for hours and hours in the day and in the heat and actually physically transforming, producing land into a beautiful garden, they begin to understand that we really were trying to accomplish something that was good for everyone. And then we started to gain more acceptance in the community. And when we started Live Power Community Farm, we worked in the first years with a few of the apprentices that had come to the Kovalo Village Garden, but then we gradually evolved to trying to help train and teach 5 and 6 and sometimes more apprentices over the whole growing season at Live Power Community Farm. So actually kind of ended up creating a community where we lived. It's a 50-acre property, and there was room for quite a few people, and we had a very diverse farm organism that we developed along the lines of biodynamic agriculture. And we actually have used the biodynamic sprays and preparations in the compost and are trying to work with it to create that quality of food and to have that conscious care of the living world, not just the physical parts of the living world, but also the spirit behind the physical, and trying to support that in its growth. So I was not excited about using machinery and fossil energy equipment. Even then, I was concerned about what it would do to the environment and also what it does to people using it. And so I went looking for draft animals. I thought that would be a solution to being able to expand our cultivation and having help, muscle power to do that. Started with donkeys. That was all I could find in Mendocino County at the time. And I was a beginner, and I had to teach myself because there weren't any old-time teachers nearby. But working with the donkeys, they taught me a lot. And we eventually worked it out to where we could do quite a few things. It's important to remember that we've only had fossil energy-dependent agriculture for a little over 100 years. I mean, before the 1900s, all the agriculture was based on muscle power. It seems like it might be from the past, but I think it's a basis for the future. I think that we're going to pretty soon have to look at being able to produce food with the energy, current energy of the sun, and we've got to leave the fossil energy out because it's organic farming started with we didn't want to poison the soil and we didn't want chemicals in the soil. Well, it's not just the soil, it's also the whole air and the whole of the living world. And so we need to find ways to work with that, that conserve and protect and maintain life.
You said that you weren't able to find old-timers to help you train animals and work with animals, but I'm wondering if you did make connections with old-timers, people who'd been on the land for generations.
Well, we had some cows, dairy cows, and we were just learning. I mean, I learned how to milk with this dairy cow we had, and we were still learning about breeding, and we didn't have a horse trailer, but we had our donkeys, and we had a flatbed trailer and wagon, and we had a cow that we wanted to get bred, and we didn't have a bull. And so Zola Bauer, wonderful rancher down the road from us, asked him if we could bring our cow down to get her bred. And so Stephen hitched up the donkeys to the wagon, and then we tied the cow to the back of the wagon, and we went down the road about a half a mile or so. And she was in milk, so she went to go see the bull. And I would go over there every day, twice a day, and milk her. And lo and behold, after all this time, she was already pregnant. And we didn't know it. She had taken care of it herself. She'd visited the bull, the neighbor's bull. And Zola never, you know, let us forget about that. But in the process, you know, we were going down there with the donkeys. We didn't have a car for a while, and Stephen had built some cute little carts with the donkey that he could go to town and pick things up, you know, feed and such like that, that we needed. So, you know, he would cruise into town with the donkey. And so Zola used to call him the jackass man.
Yeah, well, when we came in with the wagon, he walked all around and he looked at the harness and he said, well, you know, I had chain harness on there. And he said, you know, this trace chain, I think it's on there backwards. And lo and behold, when I learned a little bit more, I discovered that he was absolutely right. But he got a real kick out of seeing us doing this. And we got a real kick out of meeting him and him being a longtime rancher in Covelo and recognizing that, you know, we were young kids, but we were trying to go in some directions that he was very familiar with. And so he was very willing to help us and accept us, which was really, really great. And we're still good friends with his family, his descendants.
So Stephen plays guitar, and we had a group of friends that he played with, banjo and fiddle, and they'd get together weekly or so, and we would organize square dances. So then I kind of took that over, and I would try to have square dances every 6 weeks or so. I mean, I love to dance, and particularly square dances, because, you know, you come together as a community and you get to appreciate each other as individuals, and you just have fun, you know. And so we would have dances quite regularly. And then as my children grew and they were in the charter school, one of the requirements of the school was to volunteer 2 hours a day, 2 hours a week per child. And so I'd have three kids and 6 hours a week. And so I would teach all of the kids in the classes. I would do each class and we would do square dancing. And then, you know, I would encourage all of the kids to come to the public dances that we would have. And so it would be an incredibly wonderful family event that everyone just thoroughly enjoyed. And then down the road, I pretty much initiated a harvest festival in the fall to acknowledge the agricultural bounty that we had, and it was a wonderful community event, and when we could, we'd end the evening with a square dance. But we also had this Peruvian bamboo flute group that would come up to play music for us, and we'd have lots of activities for the kids, and we would have stone soup, and we would have storytelling, and everyone would bring something for the stone soup, and then we'd have a community potluck together and freshly homemade bread and fresh squeezed apple juice and homemade ice cream and a hay maze.
Yeah,
is that what it was? A hay maze that the kids could run
hay
through?
Hay bales that you could crawl into and try to find your way in and out of.
And my kids.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun for the kids.
My sons would haul the hay and build the hay maze and take it apart. And eventually they told me, "Ma, you know, that's a lot of work. I don't know that we're going to do that anymore." You know, but while they did, it was really fun. And they made the ice cream and they helped with the, you know, apple cider press and all of those things.
And the Peruvian music was authentic instruments that were used in those countries, and the songs that they were singing and playing were harvest, basically harvest celebration songs. So that was really special to hear that coming through the lens of another culture, and, but, you know, being part of our celebration of harvest and agriculture.
One of the other things that we've done all these years, started in 1984, is having school class visits with Waldorf schools from all over Northern California. And they come to the farm for 3 or 4 days and milk the cow, feed the animals, make compost, whole variety of activities. And
plow behind a team of horses. Sheep. Yeah, shear sheep. Whatever's going on the farm, plant beans or corn seed, you know, feed the animals, do the chores with us. And so there's a whole community that developed out of that that goes all the way as far as Monterey. We've had classes come from Monterey, from Sacramento, from San Francisco for 30 years. 35 years. So, Live Power Community Farm, that's also part of the name of the community farm. We don't go to markets, farmers markets, but instead we try to work directly with people as members in the farm, and they carry a share of the cost of operating the farm to produce the food that's planned to meet their needs. And then everything that we grow is given to them, you know, at the harvest days twice a week. That's another aspect of community, but bringing it into the economic realm in market economics, often the goal is taking care of some individual or individual kind of party's needs are uppermost. But in a truly community-based economic process, the bottom line is not the gain of the individual, it's the gain of everyone involved. And that's what our agriculture needs to be based on.
How long did it take to figure out how to make it work?
Well, we worked off the farm the first, until our oldest son was born.
4 or 5 years.
But when we started the CSA, we were pretty much the first CSA in California. That was, I think, the beginning of being able
to... Some kind of economic stability, because before that, we did a farmer's market in Covelo for about, 3-4 years there. We were doing that, and we were able to make enough over the summer to cover our basic needs. And we were growing a lot of our own food anyway. We had our own milk and our meat and our vegetables and some fruit. But as far as having any capital to build fences or put in a well or really develop agriculturally and to establish a viable business, we weren't really able to do that until we heard about the concept of community supported agriculture, come to be called CSA. Nowadays, there are very few examples where they follow the original concept, which was that the people eating food recognize that they need to be in partnership with the people growing food, and that they need to meet the needs of the growing end of their community, and in order to meet the needs, their own needs. And that we need to meet the needs of taking care of the land in a healthy way. So those are all the players. So when we begin to work together that way in mutual support, it's that the members are actually taking a share of the economic requirements to produce the food according to the standards that they want to see maintained in terms of maintaining soil fertility in the long term, in terms of not using, you know, herbicides or pesticides or pollution, or in our case, even air pollution, which is, you know, not the norm, or hasn't been to this point in time. But that can be done through community. It's much harder to do that through market capitalism, where the tendency is to go to the bottom line, what makes the short-term profit, rather than what's the long-term care of the whole living sphere. And so it was when we started the community farm in 1988 with 15 families, and it actually was 15 families in San Francisco, because they had been visiting the farm with their kids, and we thought, well, we'll present this idea. And we went and had a meeting and told them that we'd been growing food and that we wanted to grow specifically for them, and had a little projection of what we would be able to provide, and a rudimentary budget of what that was going to cost. And then we came home, and everybody was really excited. We had some pictures of the farm. We had a wonderful meeting. We came home, and a couple of days later, we got a couple of checks in the mail for, I think the share cost was $500 for the season at that time. And we looked at each other and said, oh my gosh, this might actually work. And in fact, that developed from those 15 families. It doubled every year for the first several years. And then eventually, we went to about 200 households. And that provided an economic basis that allowed us to, you know, start to really capitalize the farm and develop it and do things we needed to do.
But along with that, we had the income from the CSA, but also the school class visits were also providing part of our income, because we would charge for that.
Do you think that it's something that can carry forward into the next generations?
Well, one of the lessons certainly has got to be that we're the ones that have to wake up and take care of things. I think that's one of the lessons, because
we're the ones we've been waiting for.
We're the ones we've been waiting for, yes. But finding ways to do that with a greater awareness of our humanity and how to work in social context that is healing and supportive. Those are steps into the future that I think especially some of the younger folks are starting from that in the first place, not just accepting the status quo. I mean, it all started with the back to the land and the hippie movement back there in the 60s of, you know, we've got to get away from just following the establishment, and we've got to go reconnect with the living earth, because the earth is not being cared for and is being destroyed. And if anything, that's accelerated on both sides. Some of that destruction and the way that our society and our government and our economic system and all those things work, I think it's just getting clearer and clearer that we've got to find other ways that we can make real change in the future. And we've got to be willing to maybe give up a little bit of what we might think as our own private particular good for the basis of the common good. I think that, you know, some of the back to the land of connecting with the land, people wanted to do it, tried to do it, but they didn't have the skills. And that's where work with the Alan Chadwick brought forward actually gave people real skills and abilities to work with the earth in a productive but healing and recreating way. That's what we need to develop more and more in all areas.
Well, similarly to what Stephen said, but just that the knowledge that the earth is a gift to us, and to honor it, and to know that if we do honor it, she has so much to offer us. And if we honor her and care for her in the right way, then she's just going to provide for us bountifully. And then if we do that together with others in community, then it's going to be that much more bountiful and that much more joyful that we're sharing in the work together. And I think that probably the original joy that came from back to the land is being in touch with nature, and being in touch with nature along with other people, that you're sharing this precious gift.
We've been listening to Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land, Oral Histories of Mendocino County. I'm Sarah Wright. We just heard from Stephen and Gloria Decatur of Live Power Community Farm in Covelo. You can catch short excerpts of our interviews during the news hour on Thursdays and longer episodes at 3:30 on Thursday afternoons. They're also on our website and Facebook page with pictures and longer versions. Promise of Paradise is supported by the National Endowment for the Humanities, California Humanities, the Arts Council of Mendocino County, the Judy Pruden Historical Preservation Fund of the Community Foundation of Mendocino County, the Mendocino Institute, Story Center, and the Grace Hudson Museum.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear.